This meeting is now being recorded.
And I'd like to welcome everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the RPM Subteam for Sunrise Data Review Call on the 20th of February, 2019. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call today. Attendance will be taken via the Adobe Connect room. So if you happen to be only on the audio bridge, would you please let yourself be known now? Right, hearing no names, I would like to remind all participants also to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll hand the meeting back over to Julie Hedlund.
Thank you very much, Michelle. This is Julie Hedlund from staff. So I will quickly run through the agenda here today. First of all, we have the updates to statements of interest, then followed by the review of the INTA new GTLD impact study survey results with respect to the claims charter questions. And that's the preamble question and then questions 1 through 12. And you'll see the links there for the questions. And then any other business. May I ask if anyone has any other business? Kathy, please.
Hi, Kelly. This is Kathy. Hi, everyone. I'll make the same announcement I made in the trading claims subteam, which is it's really any other business, but I'll just go ahead and say it, which is that the schedule for the meeting in Kobe is now posted, and our meetings, our 4 face-to-face sessions, will be on the Sunday and Monday of the meeting. So I just wanted to let everyone know that's up. Thanks, Julie.
Oh, thank you very much, Kathy. That's quite helpful. And I'm not seeing any other hands. And I do see that Greg Shatten has joined us. So I'm going to go ahead and turn things over to Greg Shatten to continue with agenda item 2. Thank you.
Thanks very much. So we'll get this up in the screen here in a second, and we can go on. There we are. Some might have do you want to start with 1 or preamble? I'm just wondering, some have thought it's better to start with question 1 since the preamble kind of is a wrap-up. So why don't we start with question 1? How's that for a last-second curveball? George says preamble. Well, here's question 1. So let us go to the new material. There wasn't a lot of participation this week. So on this one, on question 1, we have only David McCauley, who says there's nothing on non-exact match. Kathy, your hand's up. Please go ahead.
Sorry, Greg. Old hand. I'll take it down. Thanks.
Okay. And I did some review. I see George agrees also, you know, my review came out the same way on question 1, at least. Question 2, then we should go off to. George, you have a hand up?
Yeah, George Quick, for the transcript, I did have an overarching comment, not the same one I made in the earlier trademark claims call, but it's worth repeating, just like Susan made her overarching comment last week. I think we need to take into account that this was an unrepresentative and small sample with only 33 participants. So the past statistical criticisms of this survey that were made at the time it was presented are worth bearing in mind. On page 6, we had evidence where only 39% of the people that responded, or companies that responded, had between 5,000 and 24,999 employees. If 39% had 25,000 or more employees. Also, 27% had between 1 billion and 5 billion in revenues, and 52% had 5 billion or more in revenues. Also, 67% were based in North America and 21% in the EU. So that just demonstrates that it's very unrepresentative of a typical trademark holder. These are very large companies, and so we should keep that in mind when we're weighing the evidence accordingly. Thanks.
thanks. We did have a discussion about the extent to which the concerns of larger and smaller trademark holders are the same or different. We don't have to have that same discussion again, but, you know, mostly what we're here to do at this point really is to identify data points that can be used and as well, you know, have some discussion. Ryan, welcome. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. And I don't want to beat into this or belabor it, but I just want to say, George, this is the same comment that you've made going back, I think, since before the interest survey was presented, and trying to frame it as a kind of a justified intervention because of something another working group member, I think, missed the point that we've heard it all before, so I would ask respectfully that, you know, we just consider it noted and move on to the task at hand. Sorry, everyone, for the interruption.
Thanks, Brian. I think that actually was George's intent to get it in once, not every time. But George has his hand up again. Please go ahead.
Yeah. George Kirkus, I didn't see Brian object when Susan made that comment last week in both sub-team calls, so I don't see why he considers anything to be inappropriate at this time.
George?
Me?
George, this is Brian. The reason is because you've been raising the same question about the legitimacy of the INTA report since it was presented. You were berating Lori Shulman who presented it. It's not a new concern that you're raising. We've heard it, I don't know how many times before. So if Susan's raising the same consideration once, that's a far different thing than you raising it for the umpteenth time. So thanks.
Thanks, George. Is that a new hand or an old hand, George?
George, that's the same hand. I'd like to respond to that. You know, not everybody that was in the working group 2 years ago is aware of these concerns. So sub-teams might have a different composition, but it does bear repeating, just like other people put asterisks next to their comments or, you know, weighted their comments. I'd like to weight my comments by the same concern that they did. Thank you.
Thanks. I'll just briefly note that the survey was sent out to all regular members of INTA. Also note that on the annual revenue chart, there was 9% that said they were not sure what their revenue was, so don't know what bucket they fall into. But in any case, let's get back to the substance of the survey itself, or rather the responses and analysis. So I think this brings us to question two. And here things are a little bit more, could be a little bit more interesting. David McCauley notes that these answers somewhat, both A and B, whether registry sunrise and premium name pricing unfairly limit the ability, and if so, how extensive. There, David cites slides 14, 48, 50, 58, and 59. And notes the first of the slides, at least 14, was called premium pricing affects most. You know, since we're gathering data and not, you know, reviewing it closely, there's no need to read the, you know, too many of these slides, you know, at the, but, you know, they're here, they said generally two-thirds of members feel their domain name registrations have been affected by premium pricing. Half have observed evidence of discriminatory pricing or unfair business practices. And 73% say they evaluate on a case-by-case basis. 67% are affected by it to some degree. And then I would also add, I think slide 15 may also fall in there as well, if I'm not mistaken. And again, 50, 58, and 59. Actually, not 15, because that's just a 15. You know, discussed the positive effects of UDRP and of sunrises rather. And then 50, a lot of mentions of the dot sucks issue. I think that also kind of shows the time frame in which this survey was conducted. Comments about charging premium prices for a house brand on the basis it was valuable despite the fact that it's not a descriptive term. You know, various discussions of the effect as well on those slides. Does anybody have anything to add to this on number two? David, you see your second. George, please go ahead.
George Griffiths, the transcript. Yeah, on this table, in the how did the data assist column, it's kind of very broad. I encountered many of the same page references that David did with some differences. So I'll just point out what I found in this question. On page 14, there was 67% were affected by the premium pricing. That stat is also repeated on page 48. Page 48 also mentions .XXX and .Asia, which were actually prior rounds of UGTLDs, and also .HBO, which is a .brand. So I don't think the people that fill out the survey necessarily were focused only on the latest round of UGTLDs. Page 14, it said that 55% observed evidence or examples of discriminatory pricing or unfair business practices related to new UGTLDs. Page 50 had commentary on discriminatory pricing in Sunrise, for example, .sucks. Page 52, general comments. These were free-form responses to the survey. Somebody said some have much higher prices during the Sunrise period, which is the only time you can guarantee being able to register the name. Page 58 also had concerns about .sucks and .love. And page 59 had free-form comment. Sunrise periods have only a minor effect because many registries target brand owners with discriminatory pricing, while at the same time, many offer the same domain name to non-brands at a much cheaper price. And as Julie asks, I'll add these to the spreadsheet later, but did want to give people the opportunity to shine by posting their comments first. Thanks.
Thanks, George. David?
Greg, thanks. David McCauley speaking for the record. And I just wanted to say a couple of things. One is I apologize to the group. Sometimes I put down slides without a brief summary, and I should have put a brief summary. I was rushed when I did this, and I apologize for that. The other thing I was going to say is when slides following 57, such as 58 and 59, when those are cited, they're typically, as George said, sort of free-form comments. There's individual comments from some of the participants, so understand it in that light. And then finally, Greg, with you being on the tablet, I would be happy to continue in chat saying when hands are up if you want me to. I don't know if that's useful or not. Thanks very much.
Thanks, David. That would be useful. Maybe someday Adobe will upgrade the tablet software so the hands are up in the proper order. Note to Adobe. Anything further than I see no hands, so I think we can move to question three. On premium name and reserve name challenges, about whether there should be a mechanism to challenge premium name or reserve name determination, and also a release mechanism for the same. And what concerns these might raise. So here we have from David McCauley, felt that this helped but not directly on both points, identified slides 53 and 60. The survey shows concern over premium pricing for slides noted in question two and perhaps slide 60. So also the question is noted above and two, the slides noted above and two. To be brought down here as well. Maybe staff can do that. And perhaps slide 60, reference to acceptable use policies could be relevant. And there's also commentary on page 53. I also thought that page 58 was relevant, and I'll put that in afterward. that said there was a quote, and this is again one of the anecdotal pieces. We have identified a couple of registrars who were withholding slash reserving our company trademark from registration. In one case, we were able to work with the registrar to quote unquote unlock the domain and register it. So that's that. It probably meant for the registries that were withholding or reserving them, but you know, that is, that's what's noted there, anecdotally. Kathy, your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. Not adding any data, but just noting that anything over slide 50 is anecdotes. These are individual commentary, and not kind of formal survey results. So I know other people have mentioned that as did you, but it may be useful if we're pulling out elements of data to note that when we do kind of formal survey evaluation versus, important commentary. Thank you.
Fair enough. Thank you, Kathy. Anything else on question three? Anybody find anything they didn't note or want to comment on what's noted here or what I noted? Seeing none, I will move on to question four. Sorry, I'm not following the chat ball. It looks like there's some digression going on. At least I think it's a digression. If it's something we should all be discussing, just bring it up in the orally, please. So here for question four, not sure if David looked and didn't find anything or didn't look. I thought that, again, question 58, for the same reason, the same quote that I read, the anecdote about withholding slash reserving company trademark from registration was also germane here, my favorite one of the Jackson Five. Anybody else with anything on question four? George, your hand is up.
Yeah, first quick question for the transcript. Yeah, that comment on page 58 actually referred to registrars. So if we agree that the comment really should be read in terms of registries instead of registrars, then I think I agree with you then. That might be a relevant piece of data for that that charted question. Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm just reading it that way because I can't think of a way that registrars, or rather a single registrar, could withhold or reserve a name from or a string from reservation. They could reserve it themselves, register it themselves, perhaps, but that's a different discussion. So I'm assuming this is inadvertency. Well, not everybody is fluent in all of the nomenclature in this area. Maybe nobody is fluent in the nomenclature in this area. Anything else for question four? If not, we can move to question 5A. The length of sunrise. And here we have David noting slide 59, which I believe is one of the anecdotal ones. Has commentary on this. Sunrise period and trademark claim periods are too short, yada, yada, yada. I don't mean to yada, yada that, but you know, ultimately we'll read that. But I think that's at least the one comment that's on slide 59 on that topic. Anybody else have I see no hands. Christine. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks. This is Christine. So apologies if this was already stated because this was my caveat. I was on vacation till midnight last night, so I'm catching up. I wanted to enter slide 51 into the record. I didn't see any citations to that yet, but maybe I missed it. I think slide 51 does talk about the, it says two-thirds of the members feel UDRPs and the sunrise periods have mitigate risk. So I think we could enter 51 into the record as stating that it is serving its intended purpose at the number of days that it's currently operating. It maybe doesn't provide any more information, but it might answer that first part as far as yes and no go. Thanks.
Thanks, Christine. We actually decided to save the preamble for last, so you can contribute that in real time, since the preamble is kind of a wrap-up omnibus question. And I note that the trademark claims group had already adopted that change in rotation. But thanks and welcome, and I admire your technical accuracy in saying you were on vacation until midnight. I usually view myself as being on vacation until I get out of the house and go to work the next day, but or something different. But anyway, anything else on this question 5A? If not, we can move on to question 5B. Mandatory versus optional.
Greg, I raised my hand late on 5A. It's Kathy.
Okay, let's. We haven't really started 5B, so let's go to your hand, Kathy.
Thanks. We don't have to go back to it. But to support what Christine said, I think also on 15, because we are talking about kind of is it working the way it is? Do we need to tweak it? Also, the overarching question. Oh, thank you for someone popping it up. So does the current 30-day minimum for a sunrise period serve its intended purpose? And so slide 15 says, I'm going to sum two-thirds feel the UDRP and required sunrise period, 64%, and I'll summarize, feel required sunrise periods have helped mitigate risk to a major or moderate extent. So I think that's data that runs to kind of it's working. So that would seem to be relevant here, and you're right, probably the preamble. Thank you.
Thanks. Let's go back to 5B then. To be or not to be. Is the green material on the first page here from the analysis group report, is that new material, staff?
This is Ariel, Greg. So that's what George's comment said in the meeting last week. So he put it in after the Google Doc was reopened.
Okay, but we went over it last week, so we don't need to do it again.
That's correct.
So then in terms of new material, we have David on page 4 saying yes, and that this answers all of the subparts. Again, slides 15, 30, 13, 15, 31, and 51. Noting that maybe comparatively felt that sunrise was more useful than claims and provided some benefit. And so we've seen those couple of those slides already. 31 is a new entrant. So I'm going to take a brief look at 31 and see if there's anything notable. This is 9 in 10 members have registered new TLD domains in the past 2 years in the sunrise. So 90% of those responding had registered in Sunrise in the past 2 years. That's what 31 is statistically. And then 51 is a slide that we've touched on how well right protection mechanisms have helped mitigate risk. Again, two-thirds feel that UDRP is mitigating risk to a major to moderate extent, major slash moderate. Extent. So that's that. Anybody else call for hands before we move on to number 6 and the SDRP? Let's go ahead. here again, David McCauley, and thank you, David, for being the this week's workhorse. Hopefully we'll have broader participation. Perhaps the ex-President's Day holiday on Monday caused a lower than normal turnout, at least among those celebrating, quote-unquote, or protesting on that day. So David points to slide 52 with a possibly rating into cost impact survey has a comment or two that could apply. As noted, URS and DRPs are burdensome procedures. Again, this is a commentary page, so these are, you know, anecdotal evidence, if you will. More comments here about the RPMs themselves, and not really about SDRP per se, but, you know, general browsing. Anything on this one? Call for hands? Seeing none, we'll move on to lucky question 7. I agree, Griffin, it's probably referring to that. But since SDRP was somewhat undersubscribed. Question 7, use of canceled / revoked SMD files. This is a question I've always had some trouble with in terms of the framing of it. Can SMD files be used for Sunrise period registrations after they have been canceled or revoked? How prevalent is this as a problem? And here we have David, who says no, didn't find anything in here that was relevant. Any comments from anybody else who may have found something even analogously of interest? I know a word search for SMD comes up empty. Or spring search, I should say, SMD not really being a word. George also found nothing. So let's move on to question 8. LRP, ALP, QLP, or for the acronym challenge, limited registration periods, approved launch programs, and qualified launched programs. I note in the chat that Mary Wong has remarked that revoked SMD files cannot be used. That seems good, you know, good to know and fair question or fair to note. Maxim, your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Maxim Ozoba, I hope you hear me. Just a note for clarity. There is an assumption that TMCH was always on. It's not the case. There were periods where the service was not accessible. Just thanks.
Thanks, Maxim. Maybe, you know, anybody else? I saw David here again on question 8 found nothing, although I think there were some things on well, registry reserve names and the like, but that's different than the launch program. I did not get to this question in my attempt to go finding. So if anybody else has anything, now's the time. I'm seeing no hands. We can roll to question 9. Note some conversation in the chat about how SDRP could be more useful with proper enhancements and broader notoriety. Maybe I'd use the word awareness, Griffin. But that's a discussion for another time. So this brings us to number 9, limitations to goods and services. In light of the evidence gathered above, should the scope of Sunrise registrations be limited to the categories of goods and services for which the trademark is actually registered and put in the clearinghouse? David McCauley, the answer is no. But we also have contributions from Michael Karanikolas, says somewhat, and looks to page 30 of the survey, and notes cost for proof of use filings are relatively low. More than half are less than USD 1,000 over 2015 and 2016, suggesting that the imposition of additional requirements are not necessarily adding to a system which is already too burdensome. And this, there is a chart here that 54% said that the cost of proof of use filings was less than 1,000, 38% said 1,000 to 4,999, and 8% said 5,000 or more. I'm assuming that's the total spend and not what they were charged for each filing. But not entirely clear without looking at the question and the underlying data. Anybody else have anything on question 9? Michael Karanikolas, your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, Michael Karanikolas for the record. Just to clarify, because the comment in there is maybe not, doesn't quite phrase it as eloquently as I should have. Because I understand that, you know, the burden of of adding in those categories could be a slightly different issue. But I just broadly thought that, you know, the fact that current cost burdens for proof of registration is relatively low is potentially relevant to that conversation, even if it's not specifically demonstrative of what the cost of the additional requirements would be. So I just wanted to clarify that. Thanks.
Thanks, Michael, for clarifying that. And it's certainly true that whenever anybody looks at any change, cost enters into the discussion. I spent this morning listening to the EPDP, and there were quite a number of discussions of how different the cost aspects of various changes, as well, of course, the benefits, et cetera. So fair enough. I think we can move to question 10, since I see no further hands. Use and proof of use. A rather open-ended assignment, not even a form than a question. Explore use and types of proof required by the TMCH when purchasing domains in the Sunrise period. David McCauley, saying no, said referred to slides 30 and 31 relating to profit. I believe, although, I don't know, David, if you want to explain this a little more, I see slide 30 has that cost that we were discussing, and also just the number of proof of uses filed by different respondents, anywhere from 0 to 21 or more. And then 31 is another, just the 9 in 10 members have registered new TLD domains in the Sunrise. 34% 1 to 10, 21% 11 to 24, 21% 25 to 74, 14% 75 or more. So that's has some discussion. There's also other slides, I believe, that go to the issue of proof of use, but maybe not to the type. But if anybody has any other comments on this, I see two hands. David first. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Greg. It's David McCauley again for the record. Just meant to say the word profit was incorrect. It should have been proof. And I just indicated those slides because it touched on the subject. Actually, slide 30 did. So that's my only comment. Thanks.
Thanks, David. Kathy, please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. Kathy, and back to that slide on page 30, I thought it's interesting that 73% of the respondents to the survey, three-quarters, have filed a proof of use, and some have filed many proof of uses. So I like that number, 73%. So I thought that was interesting. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you, Kathy. I would add slide 11, which is the kind of the summary analysis of the same data. It says 3 and 4, 73% members have at least one proof of use filed, with an average of 13 filed. Reported costs related to proof of use filings vary greatly, but average around 1,800. I personally, in advising clients, never saw the point in going into the TMCH and not filing a proof of use. Kind of like sitting in a restaurant and just asking for water. But anyway, that's a personal observation. Anything else on question 10? It would be interesting to compare. It wouldn't be hard to see the how many have proof of use versus how many have, I think 90% had registrations and only 73% had proof of use. So I guess a number of people felt differently than I did about that. Question 11. Let's go to question 11, non-English script / language participation. I tried to do an IDN search and was not able to use other scripts to search the PDF. So here we have David did not find anything in answering these questions about using whether non-English script and language users were able to participate in Sunrise. So anybody else have any comments on this or any nuggets? Seeing none, we can move on to question 12, specialized PLD. David here again said, no, nothing found, nothing in the survey. Should Sunrise registrations have priority over other registrations under specialized UTLDs in question of different rules, such as for community or GOTLDs? Nothing found here, but let's turn back to the group and see if anybody might have found something and not yet noted it. Seeing nothing, let's loop back around to the preamble. So as noted, a preamble asks the overarching questions, is Sunrise serving its intended purpose? Is it having unintended effect? Is TMCH requiring appropriate forms of use? If not, how can this be corrected? Have abuses of the Sunrise period been documented by trademark owners, registrants, registries, registrars? And here, not surprisingly, we did find some good stuff, or at least stuff. Just turn pages here, sorry. Here we are, page 11. David McCauley answers a somewhat with reference again to slides 15, 31, and 51. And we also have Michael Karanikolas also with a somewhat, looking primarily to be the unintended effect question, and look to slide 9, which is entitled Registration Activity is Heavily Defensive. Says domain names registered by brand owners and GTLDs are commonly parked and not creating value other than by preventing unauthorized use by others. I see that's in quotes, but I don't see that on page 9. Maybe I'm missing something, but in any case, let's see if anybody has a hand up. George, please go ahead.
George Quick with the transcript. On in addition to the ones that were identified by David and Michael, on page 14, there was a stat with 55% observed evidence or examples of discriminatory pricing or unfair business practices related to UGTLDs. On page 15, which is summarizing the data from page 51, 64% felt sunrise periods have helped mitigate risks to a major or moderate extent. Page 31, this probably overlaps with David, it's the 9 in 10 members have registered UTLD domains in the past 2 years in the sunrise period. On page 52, we're getting to the general comments here, sunrise periods always help protect trademark owners, said one respondent. And another one said, and sunrise periods have quickly become more a money-making product than a protective tool. That's more of a criticism. On page 58, there was the concern about the .sucks and the .love TLDs, and also about registrars withholding or reserving domains. But we should read that as registries, not registrars, as we discussed before. And on page 59, there was another set of general comments saying, the sunrise period allows trademark owners to purchase a domain incorporating a key trademark before anyone else can. And another person said, sunrise periods have only a minor effect because many registries target brand owners with discriminatory pricing, while at the same time, many offer the same domain name to non-brands at a much cheaper price. That's probably talking about .sucks. Thank you.
Thank you, George. And I see that Michael noted in the chat that his reference in the table is to the May 10th slide package, not to the first package. So Michael gets a gold star for going on to the second package of slides. And thanks for that. I don't know that anybody else did. So that's good, and obviously something we're going to have to cover before we move along. So we have Kathy. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. So I never made it to the second packet. I'm glad someone did. But on the first packet, if you look at slide 23, it's also talking about park domain names. And so this we should probably add as well to this to the table. And it says that parking, not including redirected domains, is a common practice, particularly so for new GTLDs, but is also widespread for legacy and CCTLDs. And it looks like 79% of the members of who responded to, of the 33 members who responded to the survey, 79% it looks like have parked new GTLDs. So I thought I'd mention that. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. Maxime, go ahead, please.
Well, for the record, two clarifications. When it was a reference to registries trying to sell something to someone, according to the registry agreement, registries are limited only to registrars with RAA 2013 agreement. They cannot sell it to someone, the brand or whatever. And the second note about parking. Parking is something which happens on registrar level, not on registry, because registries are prohibited from using wildcards. So, for example, you had domains super boots in some TLD, then you deleted it, and if the domain is not registered or reserved, and you try to refer to it, you should have not existing domain, because if a registry hypothetically creates record which gives any other answer to such request, you should report it immediately, because it's a direct violation of registry agreement, and thus parking cannot happen on registry level. Just for clarity. Thanks.
Thanks, Maxim. I think in this survey and on this slide 23, parking is referring to registered domain names being parked by the registrant, by the registered name holder. Not a registrar practice, but rather just the practice of registering domain names and, maybe for defensive purposes, but in any case, not using them, or, it could be for investment purposes, whatever it may be. But I think that's what's referred to as parking here. Duly noted that registries have, can engage in the same activities as registrars. I think the reference to selling is, more of a global kind of marketing reference, but no need to get down in the weeds. Anybody else have anything else on Sunrise questions, on the preamble question? I noted, again, slide 11, I thought was also germane here. As well as the slides that were already noted by others. And so I think that takes us through the first packet. And I have was anybody else who had any comment on preamble that wanted to refer to it? Kathy, I see your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I'm not sure how we did this. It's Kathy, but the comments Christine and I made to 5A or 5B, I forget, would seem to belong here as well, as you noted. Thanks.
Yeah, I would view them as definitely fitting here. So that should, and I would ask that each of you in our bottom-up multi-stakeholder fact gathering or data gathering exercise, if you could put that in if possible. That would be great. Any other comments on this before we move forward? But we could look at the other two packets, but I think Michael was the only one who at least noted anything, having looked through them. I think somebody noted in the slide or in the chat that they didn't see much in those other two follow-up packages. So I would encourage those who looked and mentioned stuff that they found on this call but hadn't already put into this, myself included, to put their data notes into the Google Docs. I think we have 60 minutes, so we have about 5 minutes left, which I think brings us really to AOB at this point. So does anybody have any OB? Ariel and George, I think I saw Ariel's hand go up first.
Ariel, please go ahead. This is Ariel. I think as George can probably go before me. Actually, maybe it's faster if I just do this now. Is about the next week's the homework due next Tuesday. As we mentioned in the trademark claim subteam, there are remaining three resources in the previously collected data spreadsheet. So one is a staff compiled document about the summary data on Sunrise registrations. And then the other one is the ICANN webpage of registry operators and dates for Sunrise trademarks and other specific approved programs here. And then the third one is a transcript from a data subteam's meeting with John Nevitt from Donuts at ICANN 16. So that's the remaining three sources for the previously collected data. And in addition to that, we will also share the additional data submitted by the subteam member, by working group members. So there are a total of 15 entries entered through the Google form. And we will also provide you a Google document that consolidates all these submitted data and then provide you a column for subteam members to comment on. So as we mentioned also in the trademark claim sub-team, the process of reviewing this is slightly different from the previously collected data. The reason is because the submitters, they already mentioned what summarize how the question this data applied to and how the data assisting answering these questions. So for the sub-team members, it's to basically check and see whether you agree, disagree, or have additional comments on their input. So we'll provide that to Google document as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Ariel. I see George has a hand up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, George Quirkos, for the transcript. Yeah, as I noted in the chat room, I did find about 50 other sources of data, many of which relate to Sunrise. And so I think that they should be considered, even though they weren't submitted via the Google form. These are, you know, important pieces of data, and they're balanced. They show trademark interest as well as registrant interest. So regardless of the procedure that was announced, you know, the issues of extreme workload should be considered, and also the fact that there was no opportunity to argue the Section 3.7 appeal with regards to this. So I think we need to consider these documents as well. Thank you.
Thanks, George. It's my understanding that everything in this category had to be submitted via the tool. So my understanding is that whatever Ariel is sending around is the universe. And so I see there's also comments in the chat that deadline for individual proposals was tomorrow, but I think it has been extended. We're checking to end of March. Kathy, I see your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Yeah. A question about the additional data. So the data that was submitted through the Google form, and that you had to, you know, put the URL and list the charter question that you think is relevant to. Will staff be putting those documents into these tables, or is that the sub team's responsibility? Thanks.
I see Ariel's hand is up, so I'll turn to her on that.
Thanks, Kathy and Greg. To answer Kathy's question, we will provide a Google document that transfers the content from the spreadsheet that basically aggregates the information submitted through the Google form to this Google document, so you don't need to reference different places. And then in the Google document, we will have a column for people to write their comments in red lines. So it's the same kind of flow, like what we did for the previously collected data and analysis group survey. So basically, we will provide additional table for the sub-team members to provide comments.
Hey, thank you, Ariel. Kathy, is that yeah, please.
Okay, so that, and you can tell, you know, I'm clearly asking as an individual because I'm trying to navigate. So this table, the tables that we're looking at now for the Sunrise charter questions are for the remaining three documents that we haven't looked at, the ones on the same sheet. This is a question for Ariel, on the same sheet as the INTA survey that we were looking at today, the analysis group report that we looked at last week. So that's where there are three more documents that might, question mark. So those would go on these sheets. And then we're going to have an entirely new set of sheets for kind of the additional data? Question mark. That's interesting. Thanks.
This is Ariel. So what Kathy said about the previously collected data, that's correct. So the remaining three sources, whatever comments you have, please put on the Google Doc for the previously collected data, and that's what we actually titled the document. And then for the additional submitted data, the Sunrise sub-team will have only one Google Doc because the submitted information already point out what the charter question is applies to and how it applies to. So staff don't really see the need to create separate Google Docs for all these individual questions. So we just have one Google document, and then sub-team members can take a look at it and provide their comments in one place. So basically just one more Google Doc for the additional data submitted, and that's how we can get information organized, and hope that will be clear to the sub-teams when they review it.
Thanks, Ariel. I think that'll be good for our working method. When we have all of the resources kind of all together, we'll have to think about how that's going to be packaged going forward, but certainly for the next stage. So I see no more hands. And with that, and we are at 2:01, so I will call this meeting adjourned, and we're on again next week under the benevolent eye of David McCauley. Thank you and goodbye. This call is now over.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Greg, for sharing. Have a great day. Bye.